Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we travel to South Africa. South Africa's capital, Pretoria, is known as the Jacaranda City for its lovely trees that spread a carpet of pale lavender on the streets every spring. There are 11 languages in this country. One is English, one is Afrikaans, which was the original language of the first settlers from Europe. The Afrikaans were originally from the Netherlands and, until the late 1800s, refused to believe the earth was round. They were convinced it was flat for so long that many polite sailors just avoided the topic when visiting the area. All of the other 9 languages are spoken by the great numbers of tribes that still have an important presence in the South African culture. You might be familiar with some of them, such as the Zulu. South Africa is the southernmost country on the African continent. It encloses 2 landlocked African countries, which are Swaziland and Lesotho. Many animals live here that also live throughout the African continent. Lions, elephants, giraffes, and thousands of other animals. But did you know that penguins live here as well? For information on the internet about South Africa for children, I suggest www.kids-world-travel-guide.com/south-africa-for-kids. There are many stories that come from South Africa that are drawn from legends of the Bushmen. They have been gathered into one collection and told by an old bushman named Uta, who was in charge of watching the children in the evenings at one large farm of an Afrikaner family. This week I have decided to share some of them that I enjoyed reading. The first is called The Flying Lion. "Once upon a time," remarked Uta thoughtfully, "the lion used to fly." "Ooh," said the children all together, and their eyes widened with terror at the picture called up by Uta's words. "Yes, my children, and then nothing could live before him. His wings were not covered with feathers. They were like the wings of Brother Bat, all skin and ribs, but they were very big and very thick and very strong. And when he wasn't flying, they were folded flat against his sides. When he was angry, he let the points down to the ground. Trrr! Like turkey when he gobble-gobble-gobbles and struts before his wives. Trrr! And when he wanted to rise from the ground, he spread them out and flapped them up and down slowly at first, then faster and faster, till he made a big wind with them and sailed away into the air. Ah, but it was a terrible sight. Then, when he was high above the earth, he would look down for something to kill. If he saw a herd of springbok, he would fly along till he was just over them and pick out a nice fat one. Then he would stretch out his iron claws, fold his wings, and whoosh! Down he would fall on the poor bucky before it had time to jump away. Sometimes he would find a nice fat warthog and fly up high, follow him with his big yellow eyes, and then dive down and pounce on him. Yes, that was the way the lion hunted in the olden times. There was only one thing he was afraid of, and that was that the bones of the animals he caught and ate would be broken to pieces. No one knew why, and everyone was too frightened by the lion to try and find out. He used to keep them all at his home, and he had crows to look after them, 2 at a time. Not like the ugly black crows that build in the willow trees near the dam, but white crows, the kind that come only once in many years. As soon as a white crow baby was found, it was taken to the lion. That was his order. Then he kept it in his home in the mountains and let it grow big. And when the old white crows died, the next eldest became watchman, and so there were always white crows to watch the bones when the lion went hunting. But one day, while he was away, Brother Big Bullfrog came along, hop, hoppity, hoppity, hop, hop, hoppity, hop, and said, "Why do you sit here all day, you white-head crows?" And the white crows said, "We sit here to look after the bones for the lion." "Ah, but you must be tired of sitting," said Brother Big Bullfrog. "You fly away a little and stretch your wings. I will sit here and look after the bones." The white crows looked this way and that way, up and down and all round, but nope, They couldn't see the lion, and they thought, "Now is our chance to get away for a fly." So they said, "Craw, craw," and stretched out their wings and flew away. Brother Big Bullfrog called out after them, "Don't hurry back. Stay as long as you like. I will take care of the bones." But as soon as they were gone, he said, "Now I shall find out why the lion keeps the bones from being broken. Now I shall see why men and animals can live no longer." And he went from one end to the other of the lion's house, breaking all the bones he could find. He worked quickly. Crack, 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 crack. Wherever he went, he broke bones. Crack, 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 crack. Then, when he had finished, he hopped away. Hop, hop, hoppity hop, 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 hoppity hop, as fast as he could. When he had nearly reached his dam in the veldt, the white crows overtook him. They had been to the mountain home of the lion, and they were frightened when they saw all the broken bones. "Craw, craw," they said. "Brother Big Bullfrog, why are you so wicked? The lion will be so angry. He will bite off our nice white heads. Craw, craw. And without a head, who can live?" But Brother Big Bullfrog pretended he didn't hear. He just hopped on as fast as he could, and the white crows went after him. "It's no good hopping away, Brother Bullfrog," they said. "The lion will find you wherever you are, and with one blow of his iron claws, he will kill you." But old Brother Big Bullfrog didn't take any notice. He just hopped on, and when he came to his dam, he sat back at the edge of the water and blinked the beautiful eyes in his ugly old head and said, "When the lion comes, tell him I am the man who broke the bones. Tell him I live in this dam, and if he wants to see me, he must come here." The white crows were very cross. They flew down quickly to peck Brother Big Bullfrog, but they only dug their beaks into the soft mud, because Brother Big Bullfrog wasn't sitting there any longer. Kabloops! He had dived into the dam, and the white crows could only see the rings round the place where he had made a hole in the water. The lion was far away in the veldt, waiting for food. At last he saw a herd of zebras, the little striped horses that he is very fond of, and he tried to fly up so that he could fall on one of them, but he couldn't. He tried again, but no, he couldn't. He spread out his wings and flapped them, but they were quite weak, like an umbrella when the ribs are broken. Then the lion knew there must be something wrong at his house, and he was angry. He struck his iron claws into the ground and roared and roared. Softly he began like thunder, far away, rolling through the clouds, then louder and louder till, "Rah!" The earth beneath him seemed to shake. It was a terrible noise. But all his roaring did not help him. He couldn't fly. And at last he had to get up and walk home. He found the poor white crows nearly dead with fright, but they soon found out that he could no longer fly, so they were not afraid of him. "Rah!" he roared. "What have you done to make my wings so weak?" And they said, "While you were away, someone came and broke all the bones." And the lion said, "You were put here to watch them. It is your fault that they are broken, and to punish you, I am going to bite your stupid white heads off." "Rawr!" He sprang towards them, but now that they knew he couldn't fly, they were not afraid of him. They flew away and sailed round in the air over his head, just too high for him to reach, and they called out, "Ha, ha, ha! You cannot catch us. The bones are broken and his wings are useless. Now men and animals can live again. We will fly away and tell them the good news." The lion sprang into the air, first to one side and then to the other, striking at them, but he couldn't reach them. And when he found all his efforts were in vain, he rolled on the ground and roared louder than ever. The white crows flew round in rings and called out, "Ha, ha, ha! He can no longer fly. He only rolls and roars." The man who broke the bones said, "If the lion wants me, he can come and look for me at the dam." "Craw, craw!" And away they flew. Then the lion thought, "Wait, I'll get hold of the one who broke the bones. I'll get him." So he went to the dam, and there was old Brother Bullfrog sitting in the sun at the water's edge. The lion crept up slowly, quietly, behind Brother Bullfrog. "Ha! Now I've got him," he thought, and made a spring. But Brother Bullfrog said, "Ho!" and dived in, kabloops, and came up on the other side of the dam and sat there blinking in the sun. The lion ran round as hard as he could and was just going to spring when, kabloops, Brother Bullfrog dived in again and came up at the other side of the dam. And so it went on. Each time, just when the lion had nearly caught him, Brother Bullfrog dived in, kabloops, and called out, "Ho!" from the other side of the dam. Then at last the lion saw it was no use trying to catch Brother Bullfrog. So he went home to see if he could mend the broken bones. But he could not. And from that day, he could no longer fly, only walk upon his iron claws. Also from that day, he learned to creep quietly after his game. And though he still catches them and eats them, he is not as dangerous as he was when he could fly. And the white crows can no longer speak. They can only say, "Craw, craw." But old Brother Big Bullfrog still goes hop, hop, hoppity hop round about the dam. And whenever he sees the lion, he just says, "Ho, ho, ho," and dives into the water, kabloops, as fast as he can, and sits there laughing when he hears the lion roar with anger. There is a reference in this next story to buchu, which is considered to be a plant that can miraculously cure anything. It grows wild in South Africa. So here, as again told by Uta, is the little red tortoise. "See what Uta caught near the farm this afternoon, a nice little mountain tortoise. It is still young, but it will grow. Yes, so big." A cartwheel might have been comfortably contained in the circle described by Uta's arms. It was a knobbly, darkly marked tortoise. Uta turned the new acquisition on its back, on the jackal skin rug where it lay wriggling and going through the strangest contortions. "Ah, the wise little man! Is it there its mother sprinkled it with buchu, there, just under its arm?" He touched the skinny underside of one of its forelegs. If only it had been a red tortoise, how glad Uta would have been. "A red tortoise?" asked the children. "And have you then never heard of a red tortoise?" "Yes, certainly, sometimes a red one is born, but not often. Only once in 1,000 years. And when this happens, the news is sent round, because it is such a wonderful thing. And the whole nation of frogs are glad because they know the little red one has come to help them against their enemies." Once, a long, long time ago, a mother frog laid an egg in a shallow hole in the sand, just where the sun could warm it all the day, and she scraped a little sand over it so that no one could see it. She was afraid of thieves. It was white and round and so large that she felt very proud of it, and she often went to see how it was getting on. One day, as she got near the place, she heard a little voice. "Beep, beep, mama, mama, come and find me." So she called out, "Child, child, here's your mama." My, but she walked fast. Her short legs just went so. Uta's arms worked vigorously, and when she got to the karoo bush where she had put the egg, the shell was broken, and a little red tortoise was sitting alongside of it. He was fine and healthy, and everything about him was quite red. Old mama was proud. She went and told all her friends, and they came from all sides to see the little red tortoise. There were sand tortoises, and wood tortoises, and forest tortoises, and even water tortoises, young and old, and they all sat round and praised him and gave him good advice and nice things to eat. He listened to everything and ate all the nice things and grew bigger and redder and harder, but he didn't talk much, and the old ones nodded to each other and said, "Ah, but he is sensible." But the young ones said, "Ah, but he's stuck up." And they went away and crawled in the red clay to make themselves red, but it was no good. In a little while, it all rubbed off. At last, all the visitor tortoises went home again, but the little red tortoise stayed with his mama and went on growing bigger and redder and harder, and his mama was so proud of him. When he walked in the veldt and the other young tortoises said to him, "Come, we'll show you the way to do things. You must do so, and you must do so-so," he said, "You can do so if you like, but I'll do things my own way." and they said, "Stuck up, red thing. The giraffe will get you." But they left him alone, and although they all wished they were red, they did not crawl in the clay anymore. They knew it was no good. It was only from outside, so it soon rubbed off. But the little red one's redness was from inside, and you know, for a thing to be any good, it must be on the inside. But when the old tortoises gave him advice, the little red tortoise listened and thanked them. He was a wise little man. He knew when to speak and when to hold his tongue. At that time, the whole tortoise nation was having a hard time with Ubas the giraffe, that old horse with the long neck and the unequal legs, who was all white and black like a burnt thorn bush with crows sitting on it. He had taken to eating tortoises. They didn't know what to do. They tried to make a plan, but no, they could find no remedy. Whenever Ubas giraffe saw a nice young tortoise that he could easily swallow, he picked it up in his mouth, and from fright, it pulled its head and all its feet into its shell, and goops, one swallow, and it had sailed down the giraffe's long throat. The little red tortoise listened to the plans that were made, and at last he thought of a plan. He was not sure how it would go, but he was a brave little one, and he thought to himself, "If it goes wrong, there will be no more little red tortoise, but if it goes right, then the whole tortoise nation will be able to live again." So what did he do? He crawled out far in the veldt and sat in the path where the old giraffe liked to walk. Soon he heard goof, goof, goof coming nearer and nearer. Then the noise stopped. The little red one peeped from under his shell. Yes, there was the great giraffe, standing over him and looking very fierce. "Do you know, little red tortoise, in one moment I could swallow you?" Ah, how glad was the little red tortoise. But he only said in a small little voice, "Yes, noble giraffe, I belong to the nation whom it is the custom to swallow. Please swallow me." Ubas giraffe picked him up and gave a little gulp, and the little red tortoise slipped halfway down his long throat. But wait, here a strange thing happened. The little red one would go no further. Instead of drawing in his head and legs and slipping down like a stone like all the other tortoises had done, he wanted to see where he was going. So he stuck out his head and fastened his sharp little nails into Ubas giraffe's gullet, and there he hung like a bat on a wall. Go down, little tortoise, you choke me." The old giraffe could hardly speak. His throat was so full of tortoise. "Peep, peep," said the little red one and held on more tightly than ever. Come up, little tortoise, you kill me." The old giraffe was stamping and gurgling now. Peep, peep, said the little red one and hung on with his hard bent beak as well. He thought, "No, too many of my nation have sailed down this red throat. I won't let go." Ubas giraffe danced and pranced over the veldt. He screamed and bellowed. He gurgled and swallowed. He tried to get the little red tortoise down, and he tried to get him up, but it was no use. The little red one clung fast to him till he was quite choked and sank down on the sand and died. Then the little red tortoise crawled out and went home to tell his mama that he had killed Ubas giraffe and that his nation could have peace again. Ah, but she was proud of him. "It's not for nothing you were born red," she said. "Come here, my little crab, that I may put Buchu under your arm. Come, my crooked-legged little one, let your mother sprinkle you with Buchu." When she had sprinkled him with Buchu, they went and told their friends, and all the tortoise nation rejoiced and went and had a great feast off Ubas giraffe as he lay dead in the veldt. And they thought more of the little red tortoise than ever. Even the young ones, who had been angry with him, said, "He is wiser than we are. We will listen to what he says. Perhaps, after all, there is something in being born a certain color." South Africa is the home of a beautiful and very large flightless bird. Several of these stories mention the veldt, which is Afrikaan for plain or prairie. For our final story today, here is our bushman Uta telling a legend about the ostrich hunt. The next day, all the time that was not given to lessons and meals was spent by the little boys in scouring the veldt for a red tortoise. Disappointment at their fruitless search found vent in no measured terms when Uta appeared in the dining room at his usual hour. Ah, to hear them now, he said, regarding them with his wide-mouthed smile of amused tolerance. Does it then rain red tortoises? And how can you children think you will find at the first shot a thing that only comes once in 1,000 years? Uta, asked little Jan earnestly, do you know when it will be red tortoise time again? Aha, children, said Uta readily, it won't be long now. Let Uta think. He performed a tattoo on his nose, a sure sign that he was in the thick of mental gymnastics. What comes just before 1,000, children? 999, answered Pieti, who was good at arithmetic. Now, yes, said Uta triumphantly. I knew it must be nearly time. It is 999 years since there was a red tortoise, so next year, this time, you children can begin to look for one. Only begin, because it will only be creeping out of the egg then. And perhaps it won't be in this veldt. It might be far, far away, where people don't know about a red tortoise, and so no one will look for him. Must Uta tell another story about him? The sly old man had taken the best way of escaping more questions. The little children gathered round and listened, wide-eyed, as he told the story of the tortoises hunting the ostriches. After Uba's giraffe was dead, the tortoises had a nice life for a long time. And then there came into their veldt old Three Sticks, the ostrich, with his mama and papa and his wives and uncles and aunties and children and friends. My, there were a lot of ostriches. The whole veldt was full of them, and they all began eating tortoises wherever they could find them. It was just the same like when Uba's giraffe used to go about. And the tortoises thought and thought, and they talked and talked, but they couldn't make a plan that would drive the ostriches away. The little red tortoise was thinking too, but he didn't talk till he had his plan ready. Then he called all the tortoises together. The old ones came because they wanted to hear what the wise little red one had to say. And the young ones came because ever since he had killed Uba's giraffe, they had listened to him. When they were all together, he said, "It now goes on too long, this hunting of the tortoises by old Three Sticks and his friends. Let us change places, and let us, the tortoise people, go and hunt ostriches." "Peep, peep," cried all the young tortoises. They were quite ready. But the old one said, "Is this wise, little red one? How is it possible for us to hunt ostriches?" "It is possible because ostriches never run straight, but always a little in the round, and a little in the round, so that in the end, if they run long enough, they come again to the place they began from. Now, yes, on a certain day, let us then go into the veldt where the ostriches like to hunt, and let us make 2 long rows, not straight out, but always in the round, one ring very large, outside, and the other smaller, inside. Then, when old Three Sticks and his friends come, we will call one to the other and drive them on, and they will flee through the midst of us, round and round and round, till they can flee no longer." "Peep, peep," said the young tortoises, and the old ones joined in. They saw that it was a good plan, so they all went to the hunting veldt of old Three Sticks and his friends, and spread themselves out as the little red tortoise had said. Soon the ostriches came, pecking, pecking, as they walked. The tortoises sat very still, waiting, just waiting, till the ostriches were right in the middle of the 2 rings. Then the little red tortoise gave the signal, "Peep, peep," and at once the calling began. "Are you there?" called the first tortoise. "I am here," said the next, and so it went on all round the circle, one calling to the other. "What are you doing?" said the first one. "Hunting ostriches," said the next, and so it went on all round the circle again, one calling to the other. The ostriches could see nothing. They could only hear voices calling. They looked at each other and said, "What are these voices? It is surely a great army come to hunt us. Let us get away." They were very frightened and began to run. And as far as they ran, they heard, "Are you there?" "I am here." "What are you doing?" "Hunting ostriches." So it went on over and over again. The tortoises never moved, only kept calling out. And the ostriches ran faster and faster all in the round, till at last they were so tired they couldn't run any more. First one fell, and then another, and another, and another, till there were heaps of them lying about, and just where they fell they lay quite still. They were too tired to move. Then the tortoises gathered together. They were very many, and kill them. Since then, the tortoises have had peace from the long-necked people, Ubas giraffe and old three sticks. It is only the things of the air, like crows and eagles, that still hunt them. And do you know how they do that? They catch a poor tortoise in their claws and fly way high up with him, high up over a kopje, and then they drop him on the stones. Kabloops! And there he lies with his shell all broken, and without a shell, how can a tortoise live? And then the thing of the air comes and eats him up, and that is the end of the poor tortoise. But a red tortoise they never touch. It is his color that frightens them. So the young tortoises were right when they said, there is something after all in being born a certain color. The usual discussion took place when Uta had finished, and at last Pieti said, if I had to be a tortoise, I'd be a red one. Why, child? Asked Uta. Because the crows and eagles don't catch it. To be swallowed by an ostrich or stick in a giraffe's throat would not be so hard, but I'd hate to be broken on the stones. Uta just replied, ah, my children, no matter how old friend Death comes, we are never ready for him. When Uta was young, he was nearly killed by a troop of springbucks, and he thought, no, not trampled to death. To be carried down the river is better. But when the flood came and the river carried Uta away, he fought for his life just as hard as when the springbucks were on him. It was the same when the hut was burnt, and when the mad bull chased Uta across the veldt. Over and over again the same. Always another sort of death seems better. Always old friend Death finds a man not quite ready for him. And now how would you like to find him, Uta? Asked Willem with much interest. A whimsical smile spread over the old man's face. Ah, to hear him, just sitting in the sun, my children, by the corral wall where I have sat for so many, many years. When he comes, I will say, morning, old friend. You must have been a long time on the road. Ah, so long that I am tired of waiting. Let us go at once. A person needn't pack up for that trek, children. I'll just drop my old sheepskin blanket and take old friend Death's hand and let him show me the way. It is far, my children, far to that land, and no one ever comes back from it. Then someone else will tell the stories by the fire. There will be no Uta any more to talk to the children. Followed by a chorus of good nights from the children, the old man shuffled away, not knowing that he had spoken with prophetic voice, and that friend Death would find him, even as he wished, sitting in the sun by the corral. But that was not yet a while. And he told many stories before setting out on the great trek for the unknown veldt, whence no traveler returns. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week, same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel to Central America, legendary home of the Maya Indians, gods that spit fire, and the elusive jaguar. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. Thank you to our sponsor, Anne McLean and Blue Pacific Realty. They are sponsoring Guima's Tales for Children, and her dog, Ami. Love listening to the stories. It's because of sponsors and listeners like you that KCIW can provide our community with quality programming.